Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Roman Battaglia, sitting here with Mike Green. President Ronald Reagan established MLK Day in 1983 and designated it to be a national holiday observed on the third Monday in January each year. This year, MLK Day falls on January 20th, ironically the inauguration day for President-elect Donald Trump. I say ironically because in 1968, the year that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, Donald Trump joined his father as head of the Trump Organization, a real estate company that was notorious for its discriminatory practices. The Trump Organization was successfully sued twice by the federal government for its ongoing practices of racial discrimination in housing, which King sacrificed his life protesting against. And so, on January 20th, 2025, in the aftermath of a racially polarized election, America will ironically celebrate both King and Trump on the same day. Joining me in the studio to discuss this dichotomy in our society are two organizers of local MLK Day celebrations. Due to the sensitive depth of our discussion today, I want to offer a bit more of an introduction to my guest than usual. D.L. Richardson has more than 25 years of experience in teaching and diversity training. He has taught communications courses at the university and high school levels, including civil rights history. He also co-founded the community-based organization Black Southern Oregon Alliance. D.L. has also served on the boards of Oregon Cares Fund for Black Relief and Resiliency, the Oregon African American Black Student Success Advisory Committee, Oregon Racial Justice Council's Education Recovery Committee, the Jackson County United Way, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and Ashland.News. D.L. has also worked as an equity specialist with both the Medford and Ashland School Districts and right now as the Southern Oregon Education Service District. And last but not least, D.L. is a former NC of the Ashland MLK Day celebration for 20 years. Welcome, D.L.
Thank you.
Camila Long is the former Chief Development Officer of Oregon Shakespeare Festival. She holds a master's degree in fine arts and performance. She's a member of the Oregon Arts Commission and serves on the board of directors for Southern Oregon Public Television. She's also the founder and CEO of The Black Hole, a multimedia company that centers the Black community through art and storytelling. Camila co-produced the short film You Go Girl, which has been selected for the Sundance Film Festival. Welcome to The Exchange, Camila.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So let's start, DL, with the current plans for MLK Day. Where can people find information on MLK Day events throughout the Rogue Valley? Is there a central information depot?
So MLK.com is a place you can go that the Ashland Community Committee put together some years ago, and it has a list of all the events within the valley and what's going on. Our particular event starts on January 20th as the celebration, and it's at the historic Ashland Armory. And we always recommend, even though the door is open at 11:30, you might want to get a little bit early because there's a line that always forms, because this community does such a great job coming out for this program.
Great, yeah. So, doors open at 11:30. Yeah, but maybe get there a little bit earlier because a lot of people are there.
Wouldn't hurt yourself if you were there.
Right. And are there any other events going on throughout the Rogue Valley?
I don't have all the events right in front of me, but I do know, as usual, the City of Grants Pass does one I believe it's at the Newman Methodist Church. That's usually on Monday night. I believe it starts at 6 o'clock. Excuse me if I don't know exactly the number, but I think it does start at 6 o'clock. And our good friend, Dr. Geneva Craig, will be the guest speaker at that event. And for Grants Pass also does one for the students, and that's actually going to be Saturday afternoon. I want to say it starts around either noon or 1 or somewhere in that neighborhood. But to be real quick, that has been so exciting to see the work that the students there has done. We just started a BSU there, and that advisor and those kids are just amazing. But the city itself does a great job doing a BSU, an MLK event for the day as well.
Yeah. And Camila, how do you plan to celebrate MLK Day?
Well, I will be there
at
the event in Ashland, and I will be emceeing. DL has passed the torch to me this year to be the MC. I have a lot to live up to for 20 years, a reputation of DL doing such a wonderful job and being such a wonderful leader. So I'm honored to be celebrating in that way. I've been the keynote before, invited by DL in the past, so it's fun to be able to. I look forward to this event and love it. So.
Yeah. So taking over the MC job, it's going to be a big role.
She's
up for it. She's done such a great. Does such a great job presenting for us, and she's been on our committee for years as well. So Camilla's allowed me to step away, and I can't wait to hear it because she's such an exciting speaker. Yeah.
What can people kind of expect then at this celebration at the Ashland Armory? I mean, obviously people are showing up, but what's going to be going on there?
Well, you know, the program is very lively. So we have a good lineup. We've got some African drumming will be happening, some dancing. Of course, we got an exciting new singer doing the Black National Anthem. We've got schools participating. We've got some the high schools and the middle schools. Is that Walker?
It's Ashland Middle School.
Ashland Middle School. We have, you know, the band, the exciting things, and we have our keynote speaker this year is the one and only Mr. Tim Bunn, the artistic director at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So I know a lot of people are excited about that and will show up for that. So yeah. I'm personally excited as well.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people in the community were excited to see Tim Bunn coming back here to OSF. So I'm sure that they'll be excited to hear him give the keynote address at this event. And it sounds like there'll be a lot of different performances from different groups and stuff in Ashland.
And that's why when DL says get there before 11:30, if you're out there listening, I will get there before 11:30. But we do have the overflow at Carpenter Hall on the campus of Oregon Shakespeare Festival. But if you want to get there, we'll be also handing out hot cocoa. While people wait in line this year. So make sure you get there. We got a little treat for you. You don't have to pay for it. It's complimentary.
Nice.
So that's something
nice.
Can't
say no to hot cocoa, especially.
And that's
spring.
Something that the Ashland Co-op is doing. And so Ashland we're excited
Co-op.
About their connection and being on board with us as well. And so, again, everyone who's come together for this has been, you know, the school districts, Ashland School District, SOU, Ashland Chamber of Commerce, the City of Ashland, the Co-op. And just really coming together to create a real community event, mm-hmm. as they do each year.
Yeah. My guests are Camilla Long, the former Chief Development Officer of Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and D.L. Richardson, a Regional Equity Training Specialist and the former MC of the Ashland MLK Day Celebration. Camilla Long is taking over this year. Camilla, can you please read this quote number one, from Dr. King's 1964 book about the rise of the Negro Revolution in 1963. The book is titled Why We Can't Wait. The first chapter is titled in the form of a question, The Negro Revolution, Why 1963?
Summer came, and the weather was beautiful, but the climate, the social climate of American life, erupted into lightning flashes, trembled with thunder, and vibrated to the relentless, growing rain of protests come to life throughout the land. Explosively, America's third revolution, the Negro Revolution, had begun. Just as lightning makes no sound until it strikes, the Negro Revolution generated quietly, but when it struck, the revealing flash of its power and the impact of its sincerity and fervor displayed a force of a frightening intensity. 300 years of humiliation, abuse, and deprivation cannot be expected to find voice in a whisper.
Camilla, what are your thoughts on that quote as you read it out?
Ooh, I mean, it was quick. I feel like when you organize. You know, you can't always publicize what you're doing. You know, they couldn't have done the bus boycott, right? With, you know, sending out, letting everybody know what you were doing. You know, it started first in a conversation in the churches, and it built. So I felt like, but when it hit, it struck quietly, but it was effective and well organized. So that's the thought that comes to me when I think about it.
DL, you taught history at both the K-12 and higher education levels, yet so much of our nation remains confused about the facts of American history, even when it comes to understanding the role Dr. King played in fighting segregation. Dr. King described himself as a nonviolent warrior fighting against segregation. He led a Negro revolution to disrupt segregationist policies and practices. When you ask students about segregation, how do they respond?
Well, it is a little bit difficult nowadays because it feels like that. There's a chance that some part of people don't want to actually talk about that history, and like a whole state of Florida, for instance. And how do we go about that? And part of the reason when we talk about this for the kids is to say, look, the reason there's such a thing as a community where we all thrive together is because kids your age brought about a change, brought about a difference. And one of the reasons that happened is because of Dr. King. So we'll talk more about why was that important. Why was 1954 Brown versus Board of Education important? Why a year later was it important that Rosa Parks didn't get off the bus the second time? And so all of these things come into play. And we try to give that information. We do a workshop, Black Youth Leadership Summit, in February, actually. And that's part of what we try to get over to the kids, that here's some of the things you may not hear. And not that the schools are trying to run away from it, but we want to make sure they hear the entire story, the whole story. Not just part of only knowing about Rosa, only knowing about Martin, but all the other people that made a difference, the foot soldiers, as Dr. King would call them, that made a difference in not just the movement, but in the country itself.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that the focus then, it's sort of like, you know, with history, a lot of the time when you're trying to teach history, you have so much history to teach. I mean, and history keeps getting longer and longer. You have more and more history that these kids have to learn. And so, you know, a lot of times it might get distilled down, you know, and when you're talking about, you know, black figures in history with segregation and stuff, that it just sort of gets distilled down. But it's important to talk to, for you, it sounds like it's important to talk about, you know, those other figures in history and all of the important black people who were, you know, fighting against these policies and practices.
For me, because it's such a personal thing, and Camilla and I both, in the sense that you're probably one of the most famous parts of the civil rights movement was the March on Selma to Montgomery. Well, I'm born and raised in Selma, and Camilla's born and raised in
Montgomery.
In Montgomery. Mm-hmm. So we're part of the living history of that as it returns. Now, wait, we weren't in the marches, because I know some of the students would say, what was it like? No. Let me make that clear. I'm old, but not that old. But it's important to know what that means, because we grew up at the tail end of segregation, and we were still affected by the way the influences of segregation while we were there. And so it's still something that resonates very mm-hmm. strongly with us both.
Mm-hmm. Let's dive a bit deeper into the issue of segregation for a moment. Dr. King described segregation as a radicalized economic strategy that was established as the foundation of all economic systems in America. Zoning laws, economic development, housing and commercial mm-hmm. real estate, inequitable funding of schools, banking policies and practices, business commerce are all built upon a foundation of more than a century of segregation. Segregation is rooted in the ideology of racial hierarchy, which is the valuing and devaluing of humans by the mythological construct of race and white supremacy. Dr. King sought to disrupt segregationist policies and practices by targeting both the white business leaders and white policymakers. Camilla, you tell stories to inform, influence, and empower people. How can we educate our nation's youth about the inherited conditions of segregation that were passed down to us, even here in Southern Oregon?
Well, you can't talk about segregation without talking about racism. So I still believe, you know, in this society, this is me, you know, I think anti-racist pedagogy in childhood schools is, and teaching that young is important. And there's all types of resources that are out there for people to do that. But you can't talk about it without talking about race, because what is it about? So I feel like being properly educated, and it's not about, you know, pointing the finger or calling out. It's calling in, and then it helps everyone, right? Because people don't talk about the effects of segregation on the children and how it impacts their growth and development for tolerance and indifference. So it starts to me young, and because they racism is learned, you know, and behaviors as well. Because the system supports that. So in order to help us build a greater, better society, we put it all on the table, but we teach it intentionally is what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, that sort of fell into my next question about how we can kind of be, you know, what can be done to elevate awareness of, you know, the Negro Revolution, of racism and the current conditions of school, housing and banking in our region. And it sounds like, you know, teaching kids young about this stuff is really important so that they have it in their heads early on and know, you know, what happened in our society.
And they learn it. They pick it up. It's just like any other curriculum, you know, that is tailored to each age group. And it's amazing work that's being done in that sector.
We have to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion about MLK Day and dive deep into a part of Dr. King's legacy you've likely never heard before. The Negro Revolution, led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was a series of nonviolent direct action protests that erupted across the nation in nearly 1,000 cities. Its demands were threefold: end segregation in schools, end discrimination in housing, and end discrimination in banking and access to capital. All three of these economic conditions are measurably worse today than they were on the day King was assassinated in 1968 in Memphis, where he arrived to support the labor force of sanitation workers in their protest against the city and the dangerous working conditions that were subjected to daily. D.L., educating and empowering children was a key tactic of the Negro Revolution. Can you read this quote, quote number two, from King's book, Why We Can't Wait?
Okay. Looking back, it is clear that the introduction of Birmingham's children into the campaign was one of the wisest moves we made. Watching these youngsters in Birmingham, I could not help remembering an episode in Montgomery during the bus boycott. Someone had asked an elderly woman why she was involved in our struggle. "I'm doing it for my children and grandchildren," she replied. 7 years later, the children and grandchildren were doing it themselves.
D.L., how do we ensure that all our kids of all races are informed and empowered to envision a future society that's different from the one that we all inherited from, you know, a 20th century of segregation?
Right. Well, one part is to keep telling them about it, making sure they're aware of it, which we talk about the training and the actual knowledge of the history. I love this quote because it just gets me in a point of remembering, you know, we talked in the past quote about 1963, which was arguably the most important year of the Civil Rights Movement. There was the four girls killed in a bus bombing. It was the Birmingham. It was Marshall and Washington. All these things in 1963 that made such a huge impact on the movement itself. But the Children's March of 63 was probably one of the most important ones. And the Children's March also from in 1965 with the Voting Rights Act, which is what we will concentrate on this year at the MLK event, the anniversary of that Voting Rights Act in 65. But the idea that these making sure these kids were aware. There's such a great documentary on the Children's March. And one part of that was that so many of the adults were afraid to do things in Birmingham, just as they were in Montgomery. But it was just that fortitude that kept moving it. But in Birmingham was such a unique mindset because the kids started standing up in the mass meetings. And so when the parents who were afraid of losing their jobs, who were afraid of retribution, all of these things, when they would not stand up, these kids started standing up. And when we're talking not just high school, not just college, but middle school and elementary school kids stand up. There's even a case where Dick Gregory, the former comedian, passed away a little while ago, talked about a four-year-old who was jailed and how when he asked him, "What are you doing here?" And the little kid said, "Well, I'm trying to get my tetum." And he said, because the little kid was too young to even be able to say the words freedom. So he said, "Tetum." And I always thought that was a cute story. But it showed the importance and why the kids were such a major part of the movement. Dr. King didn't want them at first in the movement. He thought, again, that they might be hurt. There might be some backlash because of having kids in the movement. But he also understood that if you're going to start, you got to start young, and you got to make sure these kids knew at that time and now even today know that they have to stand up for their rights and they have to keep moving, because if you don't, you're just going to have things pushed back on you. And that's an issue we're actually dealing with, and I'm sorry to be talking too long, but that's an issue we are dealing with right now. And one of the things I have to deal with especially since the first administration and now going into the different one, is that I think people are feeling so emboldened. There needs to be understanding. Racism has never gone away. It has not gone away. It didn't go away when Obama was elected. It was still there. But it was more quiet. I think we always talk in Oregon that there's that silent racism, whereas in the South, people are very clear about where you are. But sometimes on the West Coast, there's less understanding, and it's more about hiding it. What these kids are having to go through nowadays, still, not in classrooms, but in their hallways, going from class to class, having the N-word thrown their way. And students feel it's okay. Some are throwing it their way in the sense of the traditional "I hate you" racism. Some are throwing it their way in the sense of, "Oh, well, it must be cool because black kids are saying it, so I'll say it too." Those are the things that our students are having to deal with on a daily basis in their when they should feel safe in their classes, but they don't.
Yeah. I know that back when I was in college, I wrote a story about the same thing that was happening at Oregon State. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's that silent racism. A lot of the black students in college, you know, back when they were first attending Oregon State and now are still facing a lot of the same issues and facing a lot of that, what you called silent racism. Camila, how do we educate parents here in Southern Oregon? We talked about kids, you know, learning, but how do we educate the parents here in Southern Oregon and empower them to teach their kids about King's true legacy as leader of the Negro Revolution?
Well, I think I go against the grain. It's like, how should parents educate themselves? And I say, and feel the strong initiative, because you got to want to do something first before, you know, you got to see the importance of it. So I feel like reading, you know, finding resources and reading up on why it's important for and what the benefits of it, what it has for your children, right, and in this society, because we know that it doesn't help with I would say your personal growth as being a good human being, right? And Martin Luther King also said that, you know, the end result to racism is basically genocide. That's what it leads to. So when you let it go unchecked, you know, that's the end result. It's getting there to genocide. So when you really talk about that and read, to me, reading about what genocide is and what the cause of it is a very important starting point. For folks. I think that was one of the things that really centered me in my training with racism, is really studying up on genocide, because all of the tools and all of the reasons and all the things that happen, you can see all the things that we do now in this society and that has been done that leads to that if it goes unchecked. And you will find yourself participating in that. You've seen the pictures of folks standing around with the lynchings. You know, they happen differently this, you know, in this day and, you know, age, whether it's, you know, violence from, I don't like to put a label on anything, but, you know, from people getting shot and murdered, not from just people, but cops sometimes, right? So when you see the systemic, you know, reason why they are even were created, you can take it back just for your own education, just kind of understand why things are in place and why it works the way it works. And like DL said, it's not going anywhere. You know, racism isn't going anywhere, but to be an anti-racist is something that you can continue to work on being your, you know, your whole life. And that's my long way of saying that.
My guests are Camila Long, founder and CEO of The Black Hole, a multimedia company that centers the black community through art and storytelling, and D.L. Richardson, a regional equity training specialist and former MC of the Ashland MLK Day celebration. D.L., could you please read the quote number three from the 1965 Department of Labor Policy Research Report, The Negro Family, The Case for National Action? Chapter one is titled The Negro American Revolution.
The Negro American Revolution is rightly regarded as the most important domestic event of the post-war period in the United States. Nothing like it has occurred since the upheavals of the 1930s, which led to the organization of the great industrial trade unions, and which in turn profoundly altered both the economy and the political scene. There have been few other events in our history. The American Revolution itself, the surge of Jacksonian democracy in the 1830s, the abolitionist movement and the populist movement of the 19th century, comparable to the current Negro movement. There's been none more important. The Negro American Revolution holds forth the prospect that the American Republic, which at birth was flawed by the institution of Negro slavery, and which throughout its history has been marred by the unequal treatment of Negro citizens, will at last redeem the full promise of the Declaration of Independence.
D.L., this is what the federal government wrote about the Negro Revolution. What are your thoughts? Is this part of the history curricula in our region schools?
I think it should be in a way it is, but I don't think it necessarily is. And it's always interesting to read this particular one because this is the second part, you know, the original to look into what was going on with the quote Negro movement was more about what was the importance of the Negro in the Negro community. And it's a book by Gunnar Myrdal, The American Dilemma. And this particular study pulled from that work. And what Gunnar Myrdal said, again, a journalist psychologist from the 1930s that was talking about the Negro people in America. That still just flows in my head how, anyway, where we go with that. But in that, in his work, he talked more about at the beginning of how the Negro, the only thing that was next to the Negro church was the Negro press and the importance of the press in society, in the Negro society. And then the movement moved that out the way because, again, it showed an entire, not just individual papers, but showed an entire people come together to do one thing, to accomplish one thing, that's bring about their rights that were already guaranteed to them, supposedly. And so that's part of what this really gets into that place of and starts talking about. And, of course, we changed it to the Civil Rights Movement because we changed the name itself in the way we identify ourselves. But I think as we're moving through this and understanding it for our students, helping our students understand where we had to get to, even to get to where we are now, and how do we move forward from there, even to still just be on a level playing field. And that's still the process we still make sure our students understand that we're not at that level place. You know, there's that definition of equity versus equality. And where we are moving forward through to equality, we have not reached equity yet, which might be why some consider equity training a dirty word because of it, because I think part of that is that not understanding what is meant by that and what is meant by the need for that to be a part of our society.
Yeah. Camila, I wanted you to read this last quote from Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech that he gave during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 1963.
50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. But 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still badly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. So we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition.
Camila, we've got just about a minute left. If the measures of that shameful condition are worse today, more than 60 years later, what is our responsibility for changing the conditions today, which we inherited to be different for future generations?
I mean, I think for me personally, I can only answer it. Mine is the answer is love, all of it at the end of the day. And when you have a young child, I take it to the basic level. You say, you share, you know what I mean? Be kind. Share, be kind, you know what I mean? And then the child can't survive without love. And you love one another. You forgive if somebody does something. You know, you hug and you make up, you know, at the foundation. So I would say if love is not in the HR practices, because to me when we say equity and inclusion, we're really just saying love. But when we talk about business and professionalism, we feel like it should be absent of love in the workplace. You can't say you love in the workplace. You know, so when you're doing this work and all of it at home and play, show up with love. You can't do it without it.
Yeah. It's almost like love can mean multiple things. It's not just loving your partner or loving your kids.
Yes.
It's loving your coworkers.
Love the planet. They tell you love the planet Earth. You know, you can love environmentalism and work that you do, right? So why not love one another? Mm-hmm. And I think Martin Luther King would agree with that.
That's all the time we have. Thanks, Camila. Thanks, DL. My guests were Camila Long, the new MC of the Ashland MLK
Yes, yes,
Day
yes. I will see y'all there on Monday. Y'all better come.
And DL Richardson, a regional equity training specialist and former MLC of the Ashland MLK Day celebration.